Hola, ¿qué tal? Muy buen día desde donde nos estén escuchando y viendo. El día de hoy estamos muy contentos de grabar y de estar aquí presentes en la segunda emisión de nuestro podcast UCC Business School y tenemos a una invitada muy especial. Pero antes quiero presentar a la doctora Miriam Flores, quien está asumiendo la dirección de la División de Negocios UCC Business School. Doctora Miriam.
Gracias, maestra Net. Pues bueno, la verdad es un placer estar aquí. Y pues bueno, con una invitada de honor, la doctora Julia Sloan, que pues bueno, el día de hoy nos va a brindar este espacio para platicar con ella acerca de un tema del que hemos estado hablando en estas semanas, que es el pensamiento estratégico. Entonces, Annette, si quieres presentar a la doctora.
Claro, pues realmente compartir todo el currículum de la doctora Sloan nos llevaría un poquito más de tiempo, pero quiero compartirles o queremos compartirles que la doctora Sloan es consultora, profesora y conferencista a nivel global. Ha trabajado con corporaciones de primer nivel y con agencias internacionales. También ha trabajado y colaborado en distintos países de Asia, Europa, Medio Oriente, África y Norteamérica. Actualmente ella da clases en la Universidad de Columbia en Nueva York y su interés principal en investigación radica en el pensamiento estratégico y cómo este se relaciona con la teoría de aprendizaje y teorías también socioculturales. Ella también ha dado conferencias en el MIT, Tokyo University, India Institute of Management, en Beijing University, Central University of Finance and Economics, en Beijing y en Kingsoft. Y bueno, ha sido acreedora a bastantes premios, sobre todo en temas de innovación y de investigación, pero al mismo tiempo ha colaborado de primera mano con las juntas de consejo de grandes corporaciones y también con organizaciones no gubernamentales. Actualmente tiene un doctorado también de la Universidad de Columbia y vamos a platicar el día de hoy sobre el pensamiento estratégico. Doctora Julia Sloan, we are very glad that you are having this conversation with
us
today.
Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me and I look forward to it.
Great. Well, again, thank you so much for providing this space for us to talk to us and just have a conversation about strategic thinking. Okay, so I would like to start with a quote that you mentioned the other day in your conference by Albert Einstein, which is, we cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. So, Dr. Sloan, the first question we have for you is, how did this start? How did you become an expert on strategic thinking?
By accident, to tell you the truth. My early research was actually intended to look at how people learn to strategically plan. So how I was interested in how do we learn to plan strategically. But as soon as I started gathering data and looking at the data and analyzing the data and looking at the findings, I was really surprised to find out that the data didn't support the question that I was really looking at. It became something that was much, much bigger and far more interesting. So it was truly by accident. So I set out, you know, made a lot of revisions, really refocused my research.
So we hear a lot about strategic thinking, and it's almost like on everybody's agenda in institutions and also corporations. But what is strategic thinking?
So strategic thinking is, and that's such a great question, and it was a question that I had as well, because the word is so misused and it's so underdefined. And so I work with the definition that strategic thinking is really, one of three dimensions of strategy. So strategists really need to look at the development of three different dimensions. And I like to put this on what I call a triangle, which one dimension is strategic thinking, another dimension is strategic planning, and another dimension is strategic implementation. And these three dimensions of strategy really require very different cognitions. So that was really my interest because it's so much easier to learn how to teach strategic thinking if we know how people learn to think strategically.
Right. So Dr. Sloan, for me it's very interesting the fact that very few strategic plans actually are implemented, right?
Yes.
So what would you say is the difference between these three parts of the triangle, and where do we get lost between the planning and the implementing, and what was the role of this thinking in this whole process?
Thank you for asking that. This triangle model that I use really differentiates strategic thinking from strategic planning. And if we start with the purpose or the intent of strategic thinking, the purpose and the intent of strategic thinking is to focus on the problem. The focus and the purpose of strategic planning, by contrast, is really to focus on the solution. So I find once people get clarity around that differentiation, the rest kind of falls into place. But I also should mention, in terms of outcome, what's the outcome of strategic thinking? The outcome of strategic thinking is an ongoing, continuous process. The outcome of strategic planning is the strategic plan. It's a product. So I like to say, you know, the outcome of strategic thinking is an ongoing process. The outcome of a strategic plan is the product.
So, and does that maybe mean that is why we have, or we are so overly focused on the planning part?
I think, you know, and we are overly focused, completely overly focused on the planning piece. And this actually is, it's a huge problem, because the type of thinking we use, the cluster of thinking that we use for strategic planning is so different than that we use for strategic thinking. And we're really overly focused on strategic planning because of our history. During, if I can kind of take us back for a little nano history lesson, but if we go back to the Industrial Revolution, where we were having all of these scientific inventions and all of, you know, these great inventions were coming forward, there was an underlying philosophical school of thought that was called technical rationality. And this technical rationality actually had a rhyme and a reason to it that said, in order for things to truly have value, they need to be systematized, standardized, and specialized. And that's where strategic planning really just evolved, and it just exploded. And we've continued to hang on to that. So strategic planning, according to the technical rational model, basically is based on efficiency of thought rather than depth of thought. And I think that it's a very outdated model today, because it's very appropriate to use and it's excellent to use. We need to hone those skills, but it's very well suited for problems that tend to be more on the complicated side. But when we look at the problems that we're facing today, these are complex problems, problems that have no known solution, problems that don't have a single correct answer, and problems that may have multiple possibilities. So we need complex thinkers to deal with these complex problems. And we're not going to get that from just simply isolating our thinking into strategic planning.
Right. Yeah. Regarding this, would you say that most of the curriculum is more focused in strategic planning, and how could strategic thinking how could it start to be like introduced into, for example, a business school curriculum?
Yeah, you know, this is problematic, and this is something that we all face. Our curriculum, particularly in Western culture, is heavily focused on the kind of thinking that supports strategic planning. Linear thinking, rational thinking, logical thinking, analytical thinking, convergent thinking, these are all types of thinking that really support strategic planning. For strategic thinking, we need to have divergent thinking, creativity, into heavily developed skills in terms of intuition, emotion, divergent thinking. These are the kinds of thinking that really support innovative thought, and they really support complex thinking. So I like you know, in terms of working with business school faculty, working with business school students, I like to really, A, focus their attention on the different kinds of thinking that support strategic thinking and how different it is from those that support strategic planning, and encourage students as well as faculty to say, where are my strengths right now? And most of the time people will say, my strengths right now are on strategic planning or on strategic implementation. And the reason is, it's just because that's what we've been taught. Right. So once we recognize that and acknowledge that, I find it's great. It's a lot of fun, and students as well as faculty are great in terms of coming up with their own ways to develop this cognitive cluster that supports strategic thinking in addition to strategic planning.
So in terms of teaching others how to think strategically, what would you say are the challenges, or what is the most difficult part of teaching this?
I think the most difficult part is getting people to practice some of the very unfamiliar kinds of skills that support it. And because everybody likes the idea, everybody likes the triangle model, everybody gets the concept behind it. It's when we really get down to thinking about it and really get it down to practicing it that people kind of back off and think, well, I can see how this could apply to you, or I think I can understand how it could apply to you. But me, I'm not too willing to take those uncomfortable, awkward steps forward. So you kind of have to tease and coax people sometimes into things like strengthening their intuition, into things like developing and strengthening and really playing with their imagination. For things like getting comfortable with failure, instead of hiding failure, really bringing it out, putting it out on the table, sharing it with others, and see, are there pieces of this that I could benefit from? Are there pieces of this failure that could be salvaged? Why might that be? Are there pieces of this, you know, failed idea or failed thought that we could combine? People are very reluctant to go into new territory. So I spend a lot of time kind of coaxing people and getting people to take little incremental steps rather than saying, you know, I need to stop my life to focus on this. You don't.
And how much would you say strategic thinking has to do with people's personality, right? Like, can anybody be thought to be a strategic thinker?
Oh, you know what? I get this question a lot, and I think it's an interesting question. I don't know because I don't really study personalities, but I get asked this question a lot. What I have noticed is that introverts, extroverts, it doesn't matter, can be strategic thinkers. Strategic thinking is learnable, and I think we forget that a lot of times. In fact, it's a very pervasive myth that people think we're born with it. We're not. It's learnable. And so I would say, you know, I really don't know that there's an association with personality, and I just strongly encourage everybody to at least dive in and practice it.
Right. So you have also done a lot of work with executives, right? So
yeah.
In that sense, what was the most surprising in your study of executives regarding what they created with their learning to think strategically?
Oh, I was so taken aback. I was so surprised. In fact, I just kind of halt sometimes the things that I'm working on because I still continue to be surprised at what executives tend to really do when they think strategically, because it's not at all what we expect. And one of the things that I think was so surprising to me initially was the informal aspect of how people learn to think strategically, that they don't tend to learn to think strategically in a class, in a meeting, in a formal environment, but rather when they're doing other things outside of work, such as, you know, when they're fishing, when they're cycling, when they're jogging, when they're cooking, when they're gardening. Those are times just before they go to bed, in the shower, swimming. Those are times when our rational thinking often gets pushed to the back, and our what I call irrational thinking, that cluster of thinking that supports strategic thinking, comes out to the forefront. And so I like to get people just to notice that and to pay attention to it, because that was such a huge learning for me and something I had a hard time believing in the beginning, you know, based on the data, but it just makes perfect sense. Another thing that was really surprising to me and continues to make sense to me is how really good strategists tend to draw, you know, with a pen and paper, tend to draw. Not that they're good artists, and they often will hide, they'll often hide their sketches, but the fact that they do it. And what I have learned is it's not the drawing itself that matters, it's engagement in the practice of drawing that makes a difference. And that has just been, that's been one of the most surprising things in working with executives, in working with leaders at all levels. It's also been one of the most gratifying things.
Now that you mentioned that, could you tell us a little bit about the role of the metaphors?
Oh yeah, that's. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's another thing that was so surprising to me. I had such a hard time believing that. But the use of a metaphor when we try to make the unfamiliar familiar, okay, what we use, the mechanism we use is metaphor. And a lot of times, particularly in Western culture, we tend to diminish the importance of metaphor, and we actually tend to completely disqualify it from anything that we think might look sophisticated in terms of strategic thinking. It's very, very instrumental. And the reason that metaphor plays such a strong role in the development of strategic thinking is because it's such a wonderful, wonderful mechanism for teaching complex thinking and conceptual thinking. And if you know, for example, if we think back to when we were kids, our grandparents, our parents, maybe you were lucky enough to have teachers who used metaphor to teach important concepts. Every single religion in the world uses some form of metaphor, usually in the form of a parable or a fable or analogies or allegories, to teach fundamental, complex concepts so that we get it. So that it actually makes perfect sense that it would be used for the development of strategic thinking. And it's a fun thing to play with. It doesn't feel sophisticated. It is sophisticated.
And maybe that is something related to our culture and how we've been taught, yeah, and how we perceive all of these things, because what you've mentioned so far are, for example, here, for Mexicans, it's like, no, come on, how can you draw? No, that's you're going to be an artist and you're,
yes,
going to starve because you're not going to have a good job. Or metaphors, what do I have to read? What is that?
Yeah.
So these ideas probably are very, very connected to who we are, where we're from. But what would you say then is the role of culture for strategic thinking?
I think what I have found, I've been fortunate to work in many different social national cultures around the world, and one of the things that I have found is the use of metaphor and the use of drawing it's highly encouraged in some cultures. In some cultures, it's really kind of washed out of us by the time we're about 7 or 8. And my culture is North America, it's in the US, and I know by, you know, the age of 7 or 8, it's kind of compartmentalized and kind of pushed aside, and it's sort of treated like, you know, you're probably not gonna use this, so let's just kind of get rid of it. And that's such a pity, because when people get to be 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, and they're called upon to lead in an organization and they're tasked with making strategy, they have no idea where to begin. There have been studies that have shown upwards of 80% of senior leaders think it's very important, you know, to lead with strategy, but they have no idea how to begin to think strategically. And this is where, you know, metaphor and drawing, I just think they really need to be emphasized. And this is something, they don't cost any money. They can easily be incorporated. It's that they feel and were taught that they're not sophisticated. And it's just not true.
Yeah, it's a very good point, what you mentioned about how, since you're little, they teach you to be good at math, with numbers and stuff like that, and we don't give enough value to this.
Learn everything by heart, because
right.
Otherwise...
Yeah. Yeah, and we get rewarded. We get rewarded
exactly.
For that. And there's nothing wrong. There's absolutely nothing wrong. In fact, it's really a requirement that we're good at rational, linear, logical, analytical thinking. We have to be good at that. But it serves us in terms of strategic planning. In terms of strategic thinking, that really deep dive thinking that's a very messy, informal process, really requires the whole use of imagination, of creativity, of intuition, of emotion, it's a social process. And there's very, very little emphasis in our formal education system, up and down the ladder, that it brings any value, and it brings tremendous value.
Yeah, and in terms of the culture, maybe another thing can be the short-term versus long-term orientation, right?
Absolutely, short-term, long-term. Right now, in Western cultures, when we talk about making strategy, we tend to be looking at a timeline of about 2 to 3 years out, sometimes 5 years, but usually it's right about 2 to 3 years out. There are other cultures in the world traditionally who have a very long timeline of looking at strategy that goes upwards of 100 years. And this is something that we need to pay attention to in terms of looking at, you know, altitude, the vantage point at which we're looking at strategy, and also looking at the longevity of how long, you know, are we looking into the future when we consider strategy.
Yeah, because that way you're not scared to take your time to think, right? Because otherwise you need to show results, right?
And we need to show results right now, and we're so focused on that, and that's important. It's really important that we can do that. But it's certainly it's not a benefit when it comes to strategic thinking, where we need to push the pause button, step back, and really have the time, make the space, and make the place to think deeply and to rethink and to rethink. And we don't emphasize that. And I think, you know, certainly, you know, our cell phones and computers on and in front of our face all the time certainly don't help that.
So something that also happens with business and also maybe family business in general is that they are looking for a quick guide,
yes,
or a manual, like, just tell me the formula. I want to know, what do I have to do for strategic thinking or
right
planning
now.
And tell me if it's A, B, C, and I want to follow that. So in terms of strategic thinking, how do you connect or disconnect, or can you send a message to this business and people in this management that would say, we need to work on something else before?
And I wish I had a magic formula for that. But I experienced the same thing, that we're so accustomed, we're so familiar with everything being quick, 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 that we expect, you know, problem, solution, and we want that solution in a very prescriptive formula, where we want to know, we want to be absolutely certain that you can give me a list of, you know, if you do these five things in this sequence, you know, your future will be successful. And that's just not the way you deal with complex conceptual strategic problems. And I think people have to know that. And you just, I think as faculty, we have to continue to reinforce that message that there are different kinds of thinking required for different kinds of problems. And remind people that not every problem has a prescriptive formula as a solution. There are complex problems that we're all facing that simply don't have a solution. There is no known solution. And it doesn't mean that we just ignore it or that we just pretend that it doesn't exist. It means that we have to get comfortable pushing the pause button and using our really complex, you know, thinking skills for that.
Right, and it can be maybe against all the stimuli we receive all day, like, oh, maybe online, all the content that you see online about solve this problem in 5 steps, no, or see this manual in, and that's what sells in the end, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So another question we have for you is, how can strategic thinking and analytical thinking fit? Like, and a quote that stuck with me in the conference was, I never made one of my discoveries through rational thinking, which is something I didn't expect to read, right, from Albert Einstein.
Yeah, exactly. Who would expect that from Albert Einstein? But I think that this goes back to people need to know that, again, there are different kinds of thinking required for different kinds of problems. And that I think as faculty, we need to, again, reinforce that and to practice both and to help and to allow students to struggle until they can discover on their own what type of problem is this. And I think getting them to identify, you know, what is the problem, what's the kind of the problem, what's the nature of the problem that I'm dealing with? Is it a complex problem? Is it a complicated problem? Is a really good start, a really good start.
And in terms of faculty and students, there is this thing you have on how you connect the three levels or these three dimensions of strategic thinking with certain questions.
Yes.
With the why, how, and what. And it is also something that Simon Sinek has studied with his Golden Circle. So I just wanted to ask you, what is the importance of having these questions in a specific order for strategic thinking?
Yeah, this is interesting. Yeah, I'm, of course, a big fan of his work as well. But I think when we focus, questioning is such a critical part of developing strategic thinking. And I think a lot of times people think, oh, that's easy. I'll just bombard the person with questions. That can be pretty useless. I think we need to work with students in terms of saying, again, what type of problem are we facing? And then really taking a look at what is the content. You know, what kind of question might lead me to clarity around the content of the issue, the stuff we're talking about? What kind of questions might guide us in terms of the process? You know, how did we get into this situation to begin with? Or how did we go from phase A to phase B and then phase C, the bottom fell out? And then, most importantly for strategic thinking, is what's the premise or what's the basis and what's the foundation of this problem? That's where we really want to use the deep dive questions. And a lot of times I find it's helpful to, you know, present it to students, but then help them to look on podcasts, help them to look at news feeds in particular, and see, can they identify the kinds of questions that they're listening to? Can they identify them as what I call surf level questions and dive level questions? Surf level questions being questions that get at the what and the how, and deep dive level questions that really get at the why. Because if they can't identify it, they're gonna have a real hard time emulating it and formulating questions on their own. But it's critical that they learn to do that. And I think, you know, we can spend time 5 minutes in a class or 10 minutes in a class or get them into small groups in a class, and that they see this questioning as a real life skill, not just passing the course or not just giving some prescriptive answers, but it's a real life skill to be able to do that.
Sometimes something that I have trouble with is the part of the intuition, where you want to follow your intuition, but then your rational part tells you, like, well, I don't think I have enough data for this,
yeah.
Or the data is telling me something different from my intuition. So I think that would be like maybe how do I know if I am thinking strategically enough in that case?
Yeah, and I think, again, this goes back, you know, to what we were talking about earlier, where we need to pay attention to developing our intuition, and there are many, many good sources on this, but we need to pay attention to that, because what's interesting, to me at least, about setting strategy is that strategic direction is actually guided by our intuition and supported by rational thought, not the reverse. So this is where we have to be able to be aware, first of all, just simply being aware of, you know, is this the voice of my intuition? And then checking, using rational thinking to check it, and vice versa. That we want, when we use our rational thinking, we need to use our intuition as a check. So the two go hand in hand, and we really, especially dealing with problems we're faced today, we really need both. Yeah.
Can you suggest any habits or to develop this maybe? Where do we begin?
Oh. Good question. You know, I like to say there's really no set start point in how to develop strategic thinking. I like to start wherever people are, whether it's business people or whether it's academics or whether it's nonprofits, whether it's government people, whether it's students, it doesn't matter. You start where people are. And I think once people know and have a little bit of information about particularly the triangle model, people tend to relax a lot and get curious. And so I like to do things like in chunks, that you start, you know, present them with a kind of a sampler platter, if you will, of chunks of stuff, and say, you know, where would be a good place to start? A lot of times a good place to start is with framing, which is, you know, a way of looking at perspectives, to just get people aware of when they're making strategy, what are their habitual frames that they use? Because we all have them. You know, it goes back to, you know, habits of mind and developing these habits of mind that are very efficient and very familiar, and to just pay attention to that so that we can then make a choice as to what frames are we habitually using and what frames might be missing and what frames could bring value, okay? And how can we bring those frames into this conversation? So there's tons of stuff that you can develop around framing, shifting frames, shattering frames, reframing. There's just endless things that you can do, but that's like one chunk that I like to make as an offering. Another thing that we can do is around what we were talking earlier about questioning. Surf level question, dive level question, you know, what are you hearing? What are you around all the time? Maybe, you know, asking and inviting people to pay attention in strategy sessions to say, what kind of questions are habitual in our environment? What kind of, you know, questions are my habit? What kind of questions could we maybe practice? So questioning is another chunk. The whole thing about looking at altitude, that vantage point, zooming in, zooming out, zooming in, zooming out, that's another chunk that, again, just getting people to know about it and to pay attention, I find is really a great start point. So there's no fixed answer.
Yes, 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 personally, but knowing maybe something, right?
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a good place to start.
Yeah.
I think in the university context, if you think you found a really fast solution, maybe it is that you're only looking at things from one frame, right?
Exactly.
So you can say, okay, I am right now in the frame of a professor, but what about management? What about students? What about, you know, staff? What
neighbors,
about the community,
customers,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's so, we develop these habitual frames so mm-hmm. quickly that they create blind spots for us. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to identify our own blind spots. We need to bring others into that critical dialogue to help us identify blind spots. And that reminds me also, you know, within any business meeting, with any university, within any company, within any government organization, we have blind spots. And when those happen collectively, they become same frame thinking. And then sometimes we wonder, so why, you know, why don't we have any innovative thoughts? So why don't we have any innovative strategies? It's because we can't. We're all locked in the same frame thinking.
I was just thinking about this African author, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, who also says the danger of a single story and connecting with just having one perspective and then connect with this other question, what if? Like, what if? And if we work on maybe this exercise that maybe lead us to find these innovative solutions that sometimes we're so desperate
to find.
Yeah, and
really supports the development of strategic thinking, of really getting students in the habit of asking the what if and how else and why else. And over and over and over, you know, they may roll their eyeballs a lot, but eventually they'll begin to hear our voices in the back of their head before they come up with a quick solution that's really not innovative at all.
Yeah, because sometimes these innovative solutions, I was just thinking about these methodologies, design thinking, the lean startup, that everything seems so fast. But maybe would that be like the new next thing for strategic thinking, or can they complement maybe? What would you say about that?
I think it's so important to get all of us, to get us comfortable with the idea of pushing the pause button and just stepping back about issues, because I think we're so almost conditioned, we're so rewarded that it becomes a habit. This really rapid response, ask a question, give an answer, ask a question, give an answer. And we just, the faster we do that, the more rewards we get. And I think it's so important to get people to realize that really complex problems take time. There are no shortcuts. It's a messy process, and we can't do it ourselves. So people have a hard time with that. People have a real hard time with that. And I think a lot of times leaders have a real hard time with that. Because leaders a lot of times at all levels are not thinking at a deeper level, and they're not thinking at a conceptual level, and they're not comfortable dealing with complex problems. And I think we have to get people familiar with the idea that they do have a pause button, use it.
So, what advice would you offer to your younger self or to others who want to strengthen their strategic thinking?
I would say go right back to getting familiar and getting comfortable with really slowing down and realizing and trusting that not every problem has a solution. Not every problem has a known solution. So, getting myself and getting other people comfortable with the idea that it's okay to take your time with thought, to really engage in critical dialogue and critical inquiry and critical reflection, and that takes time. So I know I was brought up you know, I was brought up on a menu of quick, 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 quick as well. And please don't bring a solution to me, or please don't bring a problem to me unless you match it with the solution. And a lot of times we don't pay attention to the quality of thinking that gets us there. We just throw a solution out and then we reward each other for quick, quick, quick. Right. So that's something I wish, a lesson I wish I had learned when I was much younger.
Right, and that really has to do with education from a very young age.
Yes, mm-hmm. I agree.
So.
Well, I believe this has been a very, very great, awesome conversation with you, Dr. Sloan.
Oh, I thank you so much. It's been wonderful. I'm sure we could go on and on.
Yes,
about,
we could
about this.
It's talk for hours on the strategic thinking. But
yes, well, we hope we develop our strategic thinking at our business school for all of us, for the staff, the professors, and obviously the students. And, well, it's been an honor, Dr. Sloan.
Oh, it's been my great pleasure. Once again, thank you so much for inviting me, and thank you for your interest in this topic.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr.
Sloan. Thank you.